You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
16 minutes after 11. It's that time of the week. It's time for Family Matters. And Nicole Seale is here, clinical psychologist. Haven't seen you in ages.
It feels like long, hey?
Yeah. I was trying to refresh my brain to see when last we had you on. I think it's when we talked family secrets.
Yep, that's the one. That's the one.
Well, today we're going to talk about a very important, I almost said species. They're not a species. They are real people. We're going to be talking about how to connect with adolescents.
Yeah, I think species isn't too far off, actually. I think sometimes adolescents do feel like a different species to their parents. They don't seem to quite fit in anyway.
Who are adolescents? What age group are we even talking about, Nicole? Let's just start there.
I think this is something that requires a little bit of investigation, and I'm glad you asked, because I was looking through and preparing for today, and all of the textbooks are kind of going between 11 and 13 and 17 and 21. And I started thinking about that a little bit, and I thought, that doesn't sit too well with me. I prefer to look at it more in terms of kind of broad areas. So when do we start to see changes in four broad areas? Those areas are physical, cognitive, personality, and social. So we can look chronologically and kind of go with that broad definition. But I think we need to start to look at when changes start to happen, because adolescence is happening a lot earlier than it used to.
Why is that, by the way? Do we know?
I think, you know, there's a lot of research on it.
Is it what we eat? Too much processed stuff? Is it a biological thing?
There's so much research on it, and it is a bit of a talk all on its own. But yeah, people are looking, you know, hormones in foods, contextual factors, you know, society that we're living in, access to technology. There's all sorts of things at play there.
Okay, I want you to call in, share with us your relationship with the adolescents in your life. It may be someone entrusted to your care as a mentor, as a sibling, as a teacher, as a mom, as a dad, as Gogo. What are the changes you've seen in them? Physical, at the level of attitude, emotional, sexual changes. How have you dealt with these? Are you struggling currently? Nicole will give you as much advice as possible. Or maybe you had an aha moment and you have impaired a relationship that was going south very quickly as your young girl or young boy or transgendered child is no longer a child, but you've accepted they're an adolescent. And you can also pool what has worked. So don't just call if you are struggling. Also, just tell us stories of what has worked so that we can pool our resources here as a family, as a big Cape Talk and 702 family. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. You don't have to put, you're old hand, man. I just put these headphones on out of habit. When we have callers, then you can put them on. So you can put it aside for now. Let's have a lekker chat here. I find it so interesting how we forget that we were once adolescents, just like we forget that we were toddlers. Yeah. I mean, we can be forgiven for forgetting that we were babies unless your memories of early childhood go back to that time. Yeah. Why is it that so many of us as adults seem to have incredible difficulty in our relationships with adolescents, forgetting that we too were adolescents once?
I think there's a number of factors at play here. And what comes up kind of links to what we were talking earlier in terms of there's so much difference. There's so much change. The world is adapting so fast that, I mean, I'm not even that old. And I think back to when I was a teen, and it's, you know, the teens that I see in therapy now, it's talk and cheese. The world is just so, so, so different and changing so, so, so fast that I think teens also kind of feel that they're getting run away with. They have no grasp over how much is being thrown at them. I mean, if we start to think about the different developmental tasks that adolescents need to accomplish, we're looking at adapting to changes in physical appearance. We're looking at gender role identity. You mentioned transgender, which has been quite a topic lately. We're looking at knowledge acquisition, identity development. Who am I? How do I see this world? How do I want to be in this world? And does that fit into what my parents are telling me, or doesn't it? And the conflict that comes with that. We see them trying to establish relationships. We see them have massively overwhelming feelings towards relationships that you know, adults tend to, it starts to become the norm how we deal with our feelings. But teens don't have that. These are new, overwhelming experiences that they're not sure where they fit and what it means for who they are as people.
Now, I can think of a million different very specific issues we can put the spotlight on, but I want you to maybe talk from experience, Nicole. With the teens that you have worked with, what comes out of their head and their experiences that may surprise the adults who think that they obviously know their 14-year-old better than the 14-year-old knows themselves? What are the issues that adolescents probably wish we would talk about and put the spotlight on?
I think one of the biggest things that I'm seeing currently very much relates to how hard it actually is to fit in. And that sounds like such a simplistic thing. But the groups in schools, those cliques that we think, you know, stereotypically American movies, it's those cliques that are just forming in schools, and you need to do a certain variety of things and you need to be a certain variety of things to fit into a clique. And if you don't fit into one of those, you don't belong anywhere. And if you don't belong anywhere, how do you establish norms? How do you figure out your identity? The whole process of identity formation in teen years relates very much to norming against friendship groups and norming against parental influences or family influences. And if you're not fitting in anywhere, it's a direct, the way teens see it, a direct examination of who they are as people and that they are not good enough as people. And the impact on self-esteem, self-confidence, identity development, it's dramatic. The impact's dramatic, and I think we underestimate it as adults.
Do many adults make that journey for adolescents even worse? What I mean by that is that I hear what you are saying comes from the teenagers and the adolescents, and it seems to me that there's a couple of practical scenarios there. So the first challenge might be, and I can think of, including some of my best friends in high school, I always flipped between the conforming world and the non-conforming world. So I didn't play rugby. I didn't play cricket. I was with the kids who, you know, if we were forced to go and do compulsory war cry practice and put your name on a piece of paper because some prefect is taking roll call, then my friends were the kind of friends who typically would write their name on a piece of toilet paper just to annoy the prefect rather than a real piece of paper. But at the same time, I was also a teacher's pet. So I kind of like played both worlds. So I'm wondering, do some adolescents feel that mom and dad and older sibling, gogo, don't understand how hard it is to resist compulsory rugby, compulsory that, and make it worse by saying you will be part of these processes at school, for example, rather than mom and dad helping me to push back against the norms that are being just forced down my throat? Because sometimes parents pay for us to become part of the cookie cutter system.
Yeah, I think I want to sidetrack a tiny bit so that we have a bit more of an understanding here. And I want to sidetrack into brain studies that have been done on teens. And that what people often don't understand is that the very structure of an adolescent's brain is hugely different to the structure of an adult's brain. And I don't want to go too much into the neuro side of things, but what we need to understand is that their brain circuitry is hugely different in how they regulate and control emotion and how they regulate and control impulses. So they have that impulsive nature, that feeling of my emotions are all or nothing, how, this doesn't really make sense kind of grammatically, but how big everything is for them.
Sure.
There's big emotions, there's big impulses, there's big reactions. They tend to think a lot more in terms of, if you don't agree with me, you're against me. It's an absolute thinking. And that's where that black or white comes in terms of either you agree and you are with me and we are rebelling and we are going for this, or you're not and you're against me and you hate me and you slam doors and you... So it's the extremes.
Sure.
And I think it's, you know, when you're in it, it's very easy for us to sit here and talk about it. But when you're in it, it's much harder to deal with. But that parents just have this little voice in the back of their heads that's reminding them that actually sometimes they can't control how big things feel for teens.
So what do you say to parents and to adults and supervisors and mentors? Because their intentions are good, even if that's not the impact of their behavior. All mom knows is, Nicole, I'm paying a lot of money for you to go to Roy Dean. You will go to school.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I'm not going, Shirley. I'm not going. I mean, how do you square the circle? Because on the one hand, all I want is for Nicole to one day at least become a psychologist, if not an accountant. Mm. On the other hand, I heard on 702 that I've got to respect Nicole as a real individual.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the hardest things. And this is one of the big changes that we've seen in the style of parenting over the last couple of years, in terms of parents are now under pressure to be friends with their children. There's big pressure to connect to your children on an understanding emotional level, where there's a level of friendship and openness. The big thing for me there is that friendship forms an element of parenting. Hmm. It is not parenting. There is an element of, you know, I'm always here for you, I will always love you, I accept you unconditionally. And what I mean by that is I accept you as a person. I don't necessarily accept your behavior. Those are two very different ball games. And parents need to see a bit of a shift there, in terms of you're still responsible for boundaries. You're still responsible for sometimes not being the popular person in the relationship. Sometimes your child is going to be cross with you and upset with you. And as a parent, that is where your parental role starts to fit in, that sometimes you're not just the friend. Understand your impact as a role model. Mm. What are you modeling to your child? How do you respond to extreme outbursts of emotion? What is your reaction to them breaking boundaries? Do you follow through on consequences? Unfortunately, those are all part and parcel of the parenting package. Hmm. And friendship forms a tiny, tiny part of that.
So let's hit the pause button on one element of those boundaries and just be a bit more precise. When it comes to particular decisions about your child, we often wonder or worry that the, and rightly so, because you psychologists tell us that the early years matter hugely in determining what kind of adult we will be. So the choices you make, everything from extramural activities to what subjects I will do, to what extent, and I know it's a difficult question because it's so value-laden, to what extent should we respect the adolescent to be the author of their own adolescence? Mm. If Nicole says to me, I hate physical science, I just want to draw, for goodness sake, leave me alone. And you have a mom who just thinks, oh gosh, you're not going to be the next Van Gogh, dude. At least I know that you might be snapped up by an accounting firm or by, I don't know, some lab if I force you to do accounting or physical science. How should parents negotiate that? Because a 15-year-old may think that they legitimately are in a position to take those decisions. So you talk about boundaries with discipline. We'll come back to discipline. Mm. But there are already key decisions that the teenager may want to have complete say over.
Mm. And I think, you know, the importance here is very much based around communication. So there needs to be an open place where your teenager feels able to come to you and say, Mom, Dad, Gogo, whoever they're talking to, I need you to hear me around physical science. These are the reasons that I feel it's not working for me. And that is the way that I would encourage parents to have discussions with their kids, you know, obviously developmentally appropriate, but that children are able to come to you and say to you, I'm angry because of, identify the emotion and explain the underlying reasons behind it. Mm. I'm failing science because of, you know, these also provide us with teachable moments. Mm. But I think with teens, a nifty trick is often sometimes to externalize. So, and what I mean by that is to say, you know, oh, okay, you're really battling with science. You don't want to do science. Let's go do a subject choice assessment. Let's go, involve, you know, let's go talk to Uncle Todd about what he did at school and what he didn't like and did like. Let's get some alternatives. Let's get some options. The beauty around that, you're not the bad guy. And the second part of that is that you're teaching your child to look at alternatives, to always consider options. Mm. And I know it's a bit of an out. But that it does give us an opportunity for a teachable moment.
Makes sense. Mm. Okay, give us a call. You've got adolescents in your life. Are there tricky issues that you have difficulty with? Physical changes you've observed, a change in their behavior, their attitude. How do you deal with privacy in your home? That's a big topic. I want Nicole to unravel for us. The door gets shut often. And have you started treating them more and more as a young adult rather than as an old toddler? Or are you still grappling with these? Give us a call. Share your stories on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. And in Cape Town, we'd love to hear from you on 021-446-0567.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
27 minutes before noon, Nicole is with us again, and we're talking about how to connect with the adolescents in your life, whatever capacity that relationship might be in. Give us a call. Tell us what's worked, what hasn't worked, teachable moments that you've had as an adult, or if you are having any difficulties, we'll do our best, at least Nicole will, to try and give you advice. Before we take some calls from Glenn and Richard, you seem like you were suspiciously sweet as an adolescent. What were you like?
I was actually awful. yeah, my mom will tell you I was awful. Luckily, I started off being awful quite young. So
so they were used to it.
By the time I was 15, I was over it. So.
Go on, look at you now. Let's go to Mondeo. Glenn, good morning to you. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Eusebius. How are you, guest too? Eusebius, very quickly, so I can give you some context. I develop digital platforms and that, and I've got a kid who's, I think he's 14 now, and the other one's 12. And there's a couple of things that I just want to, you know, that I learned is that, number one, from an education point of view, a lot of the education that our kids are getting now is irrelevant for the current day, if not even for the future. Most definitely irrelevant for the future. And let me just quantify that, in that is that when you are dealing with kids, a lot of the time, if you want to try and just get them to love what they're doing, you need to listen to what they actually enjoy doing. A kid who is an artistic kid, et cetera, could have a future in graphic design and computer programming, where in the past, you were going to be, you know, painting murals on the side of the wall, maybe, unless you couldn't, you know, take it further. So the world is changing in terms of where everything is going. And I think a parent and anybody who's dealing with adolescents who believes that they have all the answers is fooling themselves, because we don't have the answers. None of us do. And not even the educators have the answers as to what the world is going to be in 5 years' time, never mind in 10 years' time, 15, 20 years' time, when these kids graduate and start developing their kids of their own and actually forming their identity.
You know, Glenn, so what is both sad but also so poignant and helpful in the middle of what you've just said is listen to adolescents. Who would have thought that is uncanny, useful advice?
Absolutely. And more importantly, listen not only to what they say but to what they don't say.
Yes.
Their personalities, what are their personality types? What are they doing? A person who is very introspective and is looking at how the world works in greater society, in traditional society, in popular society, is you're an introvert, you're going to sort of sit in the background. Those are the guys who are going to design systems that are mapping how our brains work in the future, simply because they are not talking, they're listening and they're looking and they're learning. And I do firmly believe that the education system, in whether it's private, public, whatever, needs a very, very serious looking at to see what are the areas of life and that where we're going to, and how relevant is European history to a grade 7?
Mm. Okay.
Is it not all of that? Mm. Thanks very much, Eusebius.
No, thank you, Glenn. A beautiful intervention. I really do appreciate it. And by listening, maybe it's worth underscoring, you don't just mean, and I'm sure Glenn doesn't just mean waiting to speak.
No. And, you know, that's, again, the communication element of things. There needs to be a space where your teenager, your child, significant others in your life, if we expand it further, need to feel like they are able to come to you and say, you know, Mom, Dad, can we set up a time to talk? I have some stuff on my chest that I want to talk about. I want to get your opinion on things. Mm. And I think it's hugely important to stress what the caller has said in terms of we don't have to have all the answers. Mm. And I think parents set themselves up in a ball of anxiety trying to, I need to be able to answer this. I need to be able to, you know, put my child on the right path. And if I fail at that, they're going to fail as people and, you know, not make anything of themselves. Mm. And that's not the case. The communication and teaching them how to think about things, developing options, alternatives, brainstorming, them feeling valued as individuals and as people is far more beneficial than you being able to say, do this and this and this and this. In fact, in that sense, we're almost looking at you protecting them from having to make their own decisions.
I don't know why we as adults often do that with children in general and adolescents included, that we are these perfect walking encyclopedias and we should be embarrassed if we don't have answers, because we role model to them a anxiety about their own limitations instead of role modeling how to embrace. Yeah, cool, I read novels, but I don't know much about science, my child. I can't tell you the question you have about snakes. I've got most of my friends who are in media. I don't have any who are engineers, so I don't have an uncle or a friend, but let's see whether someone else can put us in touch. You know what I mean? Just like there's an inherent humility when you face up to your own strengths and weaknesses. And sometimes as adults, we think that we have to pretend to be all-knowing, yeah, which sets up arrogant, anxious adults in turn in those adolescents. So unnecessary.
And we've failed as people if we don't know the answers to everything. And in fact, if you think about it, those are such beautiful moments for quality time with children and teenagers. Sure, darling, I'm not sure about the answer on that. Let's go find a book on it. Mm. Let's go do some research on it. Let's sit together and figure that out. It's actually such a beautiful moment that we're all missing out on because we're stressed and worried that we don't know the answer off the top of our heads.
And it gives you, without trying to, you know, sort of pad the advantages, but these are real advantages. Well, let's go hunting on a Saturday morning. We'll go to a bookstore, we'll go to a fair, whatever the case might be. It also gives you an opportunity to reinforce that friendship as you are jointly searching for whatever the answer might be or the experience the person, the adolescent is asking about that you don't have.
Exactly. Context creates a cause for friendship. Hmm. So if there's context in common, there's a reason to develop a connection there.
100%. Let's go to Parktown. Richard, good morning to you. Welcome to the conversation.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Go ahead. Well,
Well, I have a 14-year-old boy whom I'm teaching music and English. And the situation is this. When I'm called away during the lesson, I have reason to believe he's stealing from my study and giving my notes to another teacher and, I believe, to his mother. And there's questions of plagiarism coming up.
Mm. I'm gonna go back to my favorite word there in terms of communication, and I would look at setting that up in terms of a discussion, and not in an accusing fashion, because remember, human nature inherently avoids being in trouble. So as soon as there's an element of accusation, we start to avoid as people. So perhaps to sit down and figure out, you know, what's going on there. You know, I've noticed that sometimes when I come back into the room, things have moved around or things are missing, and I'm just wondering if you have any insight into that and what might be going on there. You know, obviously I don't have all the information around the situation, but that kind of feels like my go-to response. Alternatively, we can start to look at discussing with his parental unit.
Richard, what is your relationship with your boy? Do you guys talk in the way that Nicole is suggesting? Do you have a friendship? Do you have open comms?
Well, I was a kind of uncle when I first met the boy. Mm. And then I gave them a lesson, and they were impressed with my teaching. So we started teaching, and then it started happening. So I don't see him anymore.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, but I think, you know, communication with the relevant parties there would definitely be my go-to.
Let's see how it goes. Mm. Sure. All the best with that, Richard. Let's go to Franschhoek. Elsa, good morning to you.
Morning. I've got a son. He's 17. I've got a daughter who's 16. And generally, everything is fairly smooth. But you often get to a situation where you're asking them, listen, just come and help, do your room, sort out the birds. And you get a huge attitude and you say, or they become demanding, they want these friends, and the friends are staying over, and you've got to drive from Frontier to Pole to Wellington to pick up, drop off all day long. And eventually you say, well, you know, are you aware of everything that I'm doing for you? Just give me a bit of, just accept that we are doing a lot for you. And then they say, oh, you're guilt-tripping me. You're guilt-tripping me because you are doing so much for me. And all you, as a parent, what we're trying to do is to tell them, just don't forget that we are already stretched to our limits. We've got jobs. We're trying. Mm. And then you get accused of guilt-tripping.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is such a beautiful example of that absolute thinking I was talking about. If you're not, you know, if you're attacking me, you're against me, and then you're guilt tripping and this and this and this. And also remember, kids, manipulation is a really ugly word, but it's hugely relevant in the way that we conduct lives as people. We notice that if we do this, we get this out. Mm. And term that manipulation or whatever else you'd like to term it, but we do notice that there is a sense of causality there. So my, you know, hearing you speak brings up a few pointers for me in terms of kids have absolute thinking, or teenagers have that sense of absolute thinking. So we understand that they are going to respond in a way of extremes. We also understand that you can only do so much as a parent, and their parents are stretched thin. So my kind of sense of the situation here would be, this is what I can do for you. This is what I can't do for you. This is where we need to find alternatives. Again, we're coming back to communication. You know, what else could we formulate around this situation that could take some of the pressure off you? This is what I'm able to do. Bring your side of things, teenager. Let's see what you're able to do and what you're able to sort out. And these are the boundaries. If this doesn't get done, then this doesn't happen. And I follow through on that consequence.
What if the teenager continues to say that kind of thing to Elsa?
Yeah,
that despite her attempt to draw him or her or them into the conversation in the way that you're suggesting. Because some people's way of handling that, right? I mean, I think of many. My dad was a communicator. My mom was not a communicator. Mm. So they sort of represent two different styles of parenting. And we, I think as kids, we love them equally. Probably closer to our dad. So in our case, the communicative style led to greater love. We both feared our mom more and also had greater intimacy with dad. So, but it's a sample of one family. But some parents deal with that by just saying, you know what? I'm not going to allow Nicole to guilt trip me. I'll just ignore her guilt tripping me. One day when she's an adult and all famous on radio, she'll thank me for having ignored her guilt tripping me. Is that prudent at all, or is that not very now?
No, I think, you know, that's...
Because mom wants to get on. She's got her chores to do. Yeah. Dad's got his to do. You have to work. You're trying to bring in the bacon. You're trying to... You put so much on your plate. And I know most of you who are our brilliant regular guests in this slot, I've got some very overlapping philosophical views. I know if Jeremy is listening, what he's thinking, Jeremy Bayer, for example. But at the end of the day, mom has, this woman who's just called in, has got a long list of to-dos. She can't spend 2 hours problem solving the guilt tripping.
Absolutely.
Or am I the one who's being too conservative?
No, I 100% agree with you. And this might hit a little bit of a nerve, and I'm going to take it up a bit of a level. But in terms of, you can't feel guilty where there's no sense for you to have guilt. So the guilt there sits with a thought process, and I'm hypothesizing here, but that the guilt thought process there sits with, I'm not doing enough for my kids. And I see this a lot with parents. If I'm not there all the time, if I'm not driving them everywhere, if I'm not doing everything, if I'm not holding down a full-time job and making sure that they have everything that they could possibly need, I'm failing as a parent.
Hmm.
And I urge parents to start to explore their own dialogue around their guilt, that guilt actually doesn't have a sense, doesn't have a place with them when they are actually trying their very best, and that they don't have to bring everything to the table.
Hmm. 13 minutes before noon, beautiful conversation. We'll try and get to as many of your calls as possible in the 12 minutes remaining. Tenji, Tuki, Michelle and Nina. Let's see if we can get all of you to intervene in this conversation on the other side of this break.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Okay, let's go to Komaki. Hello, Michelle. Welcome to the show.
Hi, you see this? You know, you're my guy. Well, mostly you're my guy. But I want to ask your guest a question.
Yes.
You know, encouraging teenagers to come into a safe space in order to talk, pour their hearts out, etc. I just see a massive disconnect between the spanking, the fear. You yourself used the word fear, Nana, with one of your parents. And that, as far as I'm concerned, that kind of fear, those kind of actions earlier on, whilst it might not be apparent, I do believe that those kind of actions do impact and will then later impact that sense of trust that you're supposed to have with your parents in order to discuss things.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And it's opening up a bit of a can of worms in terms of we're going back now to, you know, raising children and from the get-go where, you know, how we discipline, how we build bonds with children. So we've kind of jumped the gun a little bit in terms of coming straight to talking about teens when, you know, I 100% agree with you that the way that parents structure their parenting and their boundaries and consequences for things starts way, way before children hit teen years. So, yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks so much. Nina, good morning to you.
Hello, Eusebius.
Hello, Nina.
How are you?
You know I'm always good when I hear you. Asking rhetorical questions.
Naughty girl. Listen, Eusebius, just about this thing about sort of education and kids.
Yes.
I love the guy who phoned in and said it's very complicated because things are changing. And I do think that there should actually be much more education for parents. Mm. Because in terms of futurology and future thinking, actually parents are very uncomfortable because they grew up in a universe which was much more stable. And the entire issues around the singularity and what is happening aren't available to them. And that means that there's this gigantic gap between the kids who actually, without even being conscious of it, are in the context of the singularity and the radical shift. And the parents are actually incapable of even conceptualizing that world. And obviously our education system is lousy. So I'd like a bit of a comment about that. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Nina. I'm going to stay out of this one. We had a massive debate last week. So some people are writing open Facebook statuses to me. Firstly, about spanking, whether it's inherently violence. And secondly, whether in a perfect world, parenting should even be licensed. Because some people think that, you know, not everyone deserves to be a parent. And that is such a complicated one. But in the meantime, I mean, obviously I love Nina, always very thoughtful. What are your thoughts on what Nina's saying, Nicole?
I couldn't agree more. There is not enough support for parents. There is not enough education for parents. There is not enough accessibility for parents. And what I mean by that is their child's schooling and their child's education often feels like this, almost like an enigma. It exists somewhere and it's very important, but they have no grasps over it. And if they try to get involved, they're over-involved and they're intrusive and invasive parents. And if they stay out of it, they're uninvolved, detached parents. So there's not enough support for parents, absolutely.
Before we run out of time, we'll try and take Tuke's call, but I wanted to give you a minute or two. If a parent has learned and come to terms with the fact that the adolescent in their life has their own preferences, their own goals, their own habits, they don't get too worried when they are in their room, closed, and respecting their privacy, when should we worry?
That's a very good question, and, you know, Teens need that space to be able to be behind closed doors, as uncomfortable as that is for parents. But I think some of the key points, and I have a long list here, but I just want to go into a few of the major ones. What is always a cause for concern is dramatic changes in energy levels, eating or sleeping. And we can go either way on those. So either in excess or limiting. Those are going to be cause for concern. Significant decrease in school performance, that's dramatically out of character, is always going to be a cause for concern. And refusal to attend school is going to be a cause for concern. We're also looking at a decrease in enjoyment in activities that the child or the teen previously did enjoy. So they really used to enjoy spending time at a family braai, and they don't want to do that anymore at all. It's important to look for extremes here. I don't want to cause panic with anybody. It's normal for them to sometimes recluse a little bit, but we're looking for extremes. We're also looking for avoidance of personal appearance, avoiding hygiene, not looking after themselves as well as they used to. And we're also looking for feelings that persist for an extended period of time. So, you know, for your teen to be crying for one afternoon into the evening, you know, generally is not cause for concern. But if we're crying for weeks on end without any abate in that feeling, we start to have a little bit of a concern there. And the last thing I want to mention is physical symptoms that manifest because of psychological causes. So here we're looking extreme constant headaches, back pain, stomach aches, those sorts of things.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. We'll have to revisit particularly the last part of this conversation. My apologies, Tuki. We ran out of time there. I'd have loved to put that question to Nicole, what we'll do with the next time we have on. I think we can stay with the adolescence topic and then start on this last theme of what to look out for. What are real signs of concern and what is just normal out-of-kilter behavior for a teen. Nicole, as always, you've been very incisive. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.